Good morrow!
I'm Allison Powell.
I'm Beverly Jean.
Welcome back to Shaky Understanding. This week we are talking about Henry VIII. And, wow.
In case you didn't get through it, Allison's gonna give us a little summary.
I almost didn't get through it, but here we go. So the prologue comes on stage at the beginning and he says, "This play is not gonna be funny. It's gonna be some real stuff going down. Get ready." Then we see a bunch of dudes, some lords, they're all chilling around Buckingham. One of the lords gets taken away to jail after talking to these lords about Cardinal Wolsey, who's kind of the king's go-to bro, right-hand man. And Buckingham's saying, "Wolsey's not loyal to the king. Don't trust him." And then he gets taken off stage, and Wolsey's in charge of his trial, because that's fine and logical and not a problem at all in the eyes of justice. So Buckingham is pretty much done from the get-go. Buckingham's surveyor is brought in to testify against him, and it's not going well for Buckingham. Then we see Queen Catherine, and she thinks that things are a little bit fishy. But King Henry says, "No, Wolsey's totally right. Buckingham is not a good guy. Let's sentence him to death." And so he's charged with treason and sentenced to death. And Wolsey has a big party, I guess, to celebrate that this plot went so well. Who knows?
He just has a party. Ladies.
And everyone is invited, including Henry, but he shows up with his lords in disguise as a shepherd just for shits and giggles. It's like, "No one knows who I am. I'm a shepherd. Let me dance with this lady." Wolsey, of course, realizes that it's the king right away and goes, "Oh, it's fine. Henry is such a good king, Mr. Shepherd. Don't you know? He's the best." And Henry's like, "Oh my god, yeah, I am." Henry then meets this pretty girl named, in the play, Anne Bullen. B-U-L-L-E-N. Which is interesting because in real life, her name was Anne Boleyn, spelled totally differently. But that's fine. It's Shakespeare. He's always right. Of course, King Henry is married to Queen Catherine at the moment, but that's fine. He dances with Anne, totally kisses her in a very questionable scene. Then word is out on the street that Henry and Catherine are pretty much done. Henry thinks Catherine's great. He's, like, kind of cool with her. But she was married to his brother, King Henry's brother, before he died. And so then she got remarried to King Henry. So Henry's like, "Oh, wait a minute, that's kind of weird. Also, all the kids that we've had are only girls. And that really sucks because we need a man to rule the kingdom. You have to have a penis to be in charge. Obviously, this marriage is over. Let me see about getting a divorce." So Henry's like, "Oh, I don't know if this marriage is cool. Let me see if I can get some cardinals to come from Rome and see if I can get a divorce from Catherine and it's all fine with the Pope." Because obviously it's still in the Catholic Church today, but certainly in the Catholic Church of the times, you couldn't get a divorce. That was a huge problem and a huge sin. So Henry's like, "Let me check this out." Then we find out that Cardinal Wolsey also wants this divorce to happen so that he can get the queen kind of out of the way, because she is a very smart woman and tends to disagree with Cardinal Wolsey. He doesn't really like Anne, but he's like, "It's fine. I'll sort out that problem later. Let's just get Catherine out of the way." Catherine, of course, sees through this plan and has a really great scene where she basically says, "Screw all of you. I am not participating in this charade. Bye." And she leaves. She gets shipped off to Kim Bolton. Now, at this point, all of the other nobles start to suspect that Wolsey does kind of have some plots going on. So they gather together to come up with a plan to expose him, but he takes care of that himself. It turns out that King Henry has some letters that Wolsey wrote to the Pope encouraging him to denounce Anne, this new girl in town, so that Henry would have to also then not marry Anne. So, whoopsie, messed that one up. Henry, King Henry comes in and confronts Wolsey, and he's like, he doesn't have anything to say and doesn't defend himself at all, and he's gone. So Henry's other favorite bro, the other top cardinal, Cranmer, comes in, and Henry's like, it's fine, I'll marry Anne, and I'll just make Catherine Princess Dowager. That's normal. Anne is crowned queen. It's a beautiful ceremony, according to three bros on the street that we see discussing it and telling you everything that happened. And everyone thinks Anne is so beautiful, and she's the best, and she's clearly an angel descended from heaven. And then we find out that Wolsey has died, and Catherine goes, oh, well, he's dead now, so I guess I should be nice about him, but really, he was a twat, so no thanks. I don't care if he's dead, he was so awful to me. Then she has a really weird dream and thinks everything's gonna be great or that she's gonna be crowned queen again. Not really sure. There's a random dream ballet. And then she dies herself. Then Anne gives birth to a baby girl. Henry, of course, wishes that the baby were a boy because, you know, penises are the best, obviously. But he goes, oh, well, let me go see my wife because she just gave birth. And then we see all these citizens that are complaining about Cranmer, new Cardinal Cranmer, and left and right all over. We find out that Gardiner, who's this other lord, he's been spreading a bunch of rumors about Cranmer. And then the council of all these lords holds a meeting to figure out what are they going to do with Cranmer. And everyone says, we should just send them to the tower. That's what we do with people we don't like. Lock them up and let them rot. But then Henry walks in at the last minute and he defends Cranmer and goes, no, he's great. Don't send him away. And everyone goes, okay, I guess you're right. You're the king, so everything's fine and dandy. And you have a new daughter. That's beautiful. Let's christen her and give her a great name. So Henry and Anne's baby girl, Elizabeth, is christened. And we're told that she'll bring great things for England. Is going to be a fabulous queen. Then the epilogue comes out on stage and says, basically, sorry if this play isn't as good as you were hoping for, but, you know, women were virtuous, so that's the best we can offer. Have a great night! So nothing happens, and it's all historically inaccurate, and it's what happens when you hire an artist to write a propaganda piece.
We have a very great guest today.
We do. This is probably, outside of Second Harold, my favorite.
Probably. We have the epilogue here today.
Hi, guys. I'm sorry. I just want to get that out of the way right now. I'm sorry. I get it. I know. And I'm sorry. I'm very sorry that this happened for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Three hours. At least. And if you fell asleep, cool.
It was shorter for
you. It's fine. I don't know, guys. This was all a blur. This got out of hand real fast. And I'm sorry.
Oh, well, thank you for apologizing.
You're welcome.
Do you have a name, or you just...
Just call me Ep, or Epilogue.
Great.
I don't need a whole lot. Again, guys, I'm so sorry that this exists. I blame myself.
Oh, don't do that.
It's my fault.
It's not your fault.
It's my fault. I did this. But, you know, sometimes you just gotta tell a story. And we don't talk about the other wives.
Yeah.
We do not. We don't talk about the other wives.
Did he have, like, a ton of wives?
Yes.
Is this the one who, like, kept killing them so he didn't have to get divorced a whole bunch?
Yes.
We don't talk about
it. Anne Boleyn is on her way out.
Oh, snap.
But, yeah, he had 6 wives, I believe.
Uh-huh.
Catherine of Aragon, Anne Boleyn, Jane Seymour. Epilogue can fill us in a little bit more.
Oh my god.
He had several wives. Catherine, Anne, Jane, and Catherine, Catherine.
Yes. I was like, they're all pretty much named the same.
Yeah, the same. Funny. There were 4 names, so and that's all you could have.
It was like he had 4 wives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, which Catherine are you? Ah, it doesn't matter.
Behead you. Yeah. I'm gonna behead
insane.
You.
That's insane.
Yeah. And also, correct me if I'm wrong here, Ep, but mm-hmm. I believe this is the beginning of the Church of England.
Yes,
because
it is.
He was like, oh, the Pope keeps telling me I'm sinning by killing off all my wives I don't want to keep around. Guess I'm going to start my own religion. Whoop-de-doo.
If that had been in the play, we would have been told about it. It would have been something that we would have been told about by those three nice men mm-hmm. on the street.
Right.
We wouldn't have seen it.
We would not have seen it. Nothing is seen.
All is hearsay.
All is heard, nothing is seen. And we're told many things that sound very cool that would have been very fun to see.
Well, we can't see the marriage in particular because back in the day, mm-hmm. if you performed a marriage on stage...
You were married?
Yeah, God don't know if you're pretending or not. So if you're doing it, God says you're married. So every time you see a marriage in a Shakespeare play, they're always like, all right, now it's time to go off stage and get married. They're always like holding hands and like, I love you so much. Let's go to the priest, you know?
Hmm. So fascinating. Here's what I was thinking mm-hmm. when I read this play, because it took me several days to get through. Mostly, I have no idea what's happening, or who I'm rooting for,
yeah.
or what the plot is.
Yeah.
And also, you know when you read a book, like Lord of the Rings, or, I don't know, probably Game of Thrones, and there's like three pages where they're talking about... And this golden plate sat on top of the red velvet
cloak.
Tablecloth and blah, 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 mm-hmm. ha, ha. I felt like the whole play was that, where I was kind of skimming and, like, waiting for the plot to come back in and kick in. And it never did. Never did. Mm-hmm. Because when the letters get found out and it's like, oh, the Pope is thinking this, I was like, oh, okay, now are we going to get some actual information and see the start of the Church of England and, like, that whole thing, which would be a really... Could be a fascinating play, like, could be, like, Amadeus if you did it correctly, and, but nope, it was just like, oh no, everything's fine, my daughter's gonna be an amazing queen, bye!
Yeah.
Because
mm-hmm. you couldn't do it if Elizabeth was there.
But also, why couldn't you do it? Because she was then head of the Church of England, she wasn't Catholic, she killed her Catholic sister, right? Bloody Mary
mm-hmm.
got beheaded too.
Sure, yeah.
I don't know anything about history.
Girl, when you're like, history be so boring. I'm like, you don't even know. People are dying left and right.
All right.
As the epilogue, I do know a lot about Henry VIII and how he's actually a very kind of tragic historical figure.
Yeah.
My favorite fact that I know that I wasn't able to say is that Henry, in a jousting tournament, fell off his horse, and then his horse rolled over him, and so he suffered brain damage. And that's kind of when everything really went insane for him. And he got injured and hurt because he was a big athletic guy. And then he got rolled over by a horse. And he kind of just went insane after that. And that's not
Who
something...
Who was he married to at that point? Catherine,
the
first Catherine?
That was one of the Annes or Jane Seymour. It was early on in his reign when he was like still cool and popular.
Right. But second or third wife.
Yeah. Still so he was late into wives. But... He then went crazy and started killing everybody. But that's not talked about in this play. Because, again, there's a very brief window where Henry VIII is, like, a cool, fun guy.
Mm-hmm.
And this play kind of gets in that window.
And gets out.
And then immediately, like, we're out. We're done. Because he's going to get rolled over by a horse real soon.
Yeah.
He's, like, on his way to the joust.
Yeah, here I go to the joust.
At the end of this play.
The play ends. It's off stage. You don't see
you
it.
You don't
but
see
it. But it is implied that he is off to get rolled over by a horse.
We see a stable
man.
Boy come out with
yeah.
a bloody napkin.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, the Lord is
yeah.
bleeding from the head.
He is a very interesting man historically. He's just, like, this sad man that if you did a proper play or... anything about him,
any analysis,
it would actually be very kind of amazing. This play is not that.
No, it's not.
And I'm sorry.
It felt like four students in the Elizabethan era were like, do a report on vignettes from Henry VIII's life and present it to the queen.
Yeah.
It's like a bunch of one-act plays of characters from his life. Like, there's the Catherine story. And then there's the Wolsey story. And then there's, who's the second cardinal?
Cranmer.
The Cranmer story. And then there's, like, Elizabeth being born. That's the four acts of this play.
Yes. It felt very much like someone came to Will and was like, so it's the Queen's birthday soon. Could you write a play for her that makes her dad look awesome and her look like a destined angel to rule over all the British Empire with lots of love and wisdom and, like, don't say anything bad ever.
Mm. Yeah, that is true. If you look at my part as the epilogue, I kind of come out at the end, I'm like, look, guys, I get it. But also, this play wasn't for any of you. Yeah. It wasn't for any of you. It was for one lady, basically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I hope she liked it, because it's just for her.
Yeah.
This play
yeah.
was written basically just for Queen Elizabeth to see how awesome and preordained everything was.
Yeah.
Also, can we talk about how everyone who is sentenced to death is super okay with it?
Yes.
Everyone is very, like, it starts with Buckingham. Mm-hmm. And Buckingham is sentenced to death, and he's like, just like my father, I suppose.
I know.
But
referencing Richard III mm-hmm, Buckingham,
yeah.
who was kind of evil,
yeah.
and was like, just, he stepped back from evil, and that's when he gets executed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This happens almost the exact opposite, because Buckingham's kind of just a good guy.
Yes!
He doesn't do anything wrong. He is then sentenced to death as like, cruel irony, I suppose, but I will not fight it, and I love my king, even though I am dying.
Yes!
See you later, guys, and I hope that the king lives super long and does a great job.
Oh my god.
Bye. There's no drama behind any of the decisions made. Everyone just kind of generally agrees with everything that goes on, so there's no real conflict. Even when Lord Wolsey, or Cardinal Wolsey, is found out, he's kind of like, well, I was, I guess, out of my element, a little out of my depth.
Oh!
I'm gonna go die, and someone's gonna tell you that I died.
Yeah. And also, can we talk about that scene where it's, how dumb can you be? Oh, whoops.
Wait.
The letters.
You have to do the setup, because he's like, no, he couldn't have possibly found me out. I need to calm down. I'm just thinking too much. Let's look at these papers you just handed me that I've been holding this whole time. Then he's like, I'll look down now. Oh, I'm screwed.
It's so dumb. It's so dumb.
We see the same thing you're talking about, though, with the whole sentenced to death, but oh goodness, I earned it. Hope the king lives a long time. And Henry V, which we just finished.
Mm. Yeah.
Because I can't
remember. That one had a plot.
That was really good.
It is good.
It's very good.
We do have that happen in a way that's not really sufficient.
Yeah.
We see, like, the French people come in and be like, God, I want to fight Henry, but he's so cool. Like, wow.
Yeah, I'm really regretting that we have to do this to such a good, virtuous king.
We're still going to fight him, but dang, is he cool. Yeah.
But
this is actually the last history, so we've read all the rest now.
Got all of them? Good. Yeah. This is probably also the worst history.
Yes,
really,
we saved it for last.
Yeah.
Honestly, but a good speech does not a plot make.
It doesn't make a plot, but it does make a play.
It makes a
no.
play, in a way, but...
Catherine's few scenes are the best part of
the
show.
They are, for sure,
good,
hands down.
So
she's the only interesting character because she's the only one that has inner turmoil and doubt. Everyone else is so sure of all their decisions and then immediately sure of other people's decisions that are made for them.
Yeah.
Yes.
That it makes this play just kind of an agreement fest. Everyone's like, I think you're wrong. I guess I am. I'm going to go die now. I think you're right. I am right.
Yeah.
Let's get an annulment. Sure, I'm not worthy. I'll be fine. Oh, I'm dying now. I have died. It's a mess. And it's if we want to start talking about the collaboration theory of this play.
Yeah, I was gonna go into that for our thing.
I think we should.
You want
to
talk about that?
I think it's important because I don't want people to listen to this and be like, "Oh, Shakespeare really." Drop the ball, because it's entirely possible that Shakespeare barely wrote any of this play. Sometimes, yeah, it's like, you know, Shakespeare does a good job. He shows a lot of stuff in a lot of plays, and those are the great plays.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime there's a play where a lot of stuff happens off screen or off stage, it's just boring.
I can see that.
Describing a man being eaten by a bear is understandably needed, but it's not as fun as watching a man be eaten on stage by a bear.
You seen The Revenant?
Ugh.
He'll get all you need.
That's my winter's tale.
So all I was gonna say, a reminder to our listeners, the reason that we started this podcast was because I used to say that I didn't like Shakespeare, and I hadn't really read that much Shakespeare, so I thought that wasn't fair. And as a person of the arts,
who was a theater history major, mind you.
I should probably be more informed.
That's the most insane thing I've ever heard. I am in Henry VIII.
We came to this and we've been slowly making our way through all of the plays. Go back and listen to all the old podcasts and get all the info. Mm-hmm. And honestly, yeah, Comedy Fair is not great. I just generally didn't enjoy it. Taming of the Shrew, as a feminist, I was like, this play should never be performed ever again, and mm-hmm. it should burn and mm-hmm. die a horrible death.
Yeah.
This is the first play that I think this is, like, the reputation that Shakespeare has. It doesn't make sense. There's no plot. Yeah. People come on stage and just make these speeches.
None of the characters matter, either.
No one matters.
Yeah. Okay, you don't have to keep track of
names, because they don't.
I was going to say, I'm reading this, and then I would sometimes have to scroll back up because I was reading it on my iPad and go, wait, who's talking?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wait, it doesn't actually matter.
There's it no, could be the king, thing. It could like be Norfolk, the cardinal. Like Norfolk and Buckingham might as well be the same person.
One of the lords comes back. Oh, one of them is like related to Buckingham. And I'm like, did we see him before? And I was like, oh, I don't care. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter.
People kind of just show up and they're, I think this is a play of the, it's a play of the time where people would know who these people
that's
are.
True.
It's like a heavily, it's like an SNL that was politically not funny and had no, and it was just kind of everyone being like, hey, hi, King Henry here, being great.
Oh, man.
I've got to go get an annulment.
Epilogue, I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah.
Let's talk about collaboration.
Mm.
So I did a little research into collaboration today, and by a little I mean little. And this was something that was done often at the times. It was just a thing that playwrights were doing at the time, either because they were friends or because it was more commercially appealing to, like, take the strengths that you have with the strengths of someone else and bring it together. It's like bringing together someone who's really good at comedy with someone who's really good at drama and making something great. Not sure that's what happened with this play, but nonetheless, it is said that this play was a collaboration with John Fletcher.
Mm-hmm.
And John Fletcher was a really famous Elizabethan playwright.
He actually started, he took over after Shakespeare either retired or stepped down. He became
after
the,
he died.
After he died. There you go. He died. I didn't know what happened exactly. Again, I'm the epilogue, so I have a very small amount also of this, but he became.
But you speak for the people.
Yeah, I speak for all of them. Again, very sorry, but he took over as the playwright for the Globe Theatre Company.
For
the King's Men. So he was a very talented writer. I think, again, they were just kind of pigeon... this does kind of scream collaboration because there's a lot of parts that don't feel Shakespearean.
Mm-hmm.
Shakespeare had a really good understanding of, like, human desire and wants.
Right.
And has a lot of plays that show that he understood the human condition very well. And
sort of, like, the differing perspectives and why people do what could be seen as evil, but
exactly.
They don't see it as evil, and that's not really.
And I'm not entirely familiar with John Fletcher as a playwright, so I can't speak for his strengths and weaknesses. But this play does the only parts that honestly feel super Shakespearean is the prologue and my part, where it's basically just apologies for what you're about to see and then what you saw.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true.
I think Catherine's scenes feel very Shakespearean.
Catherine does feel Shakespearean.
Scenes, and actually, the scene with the second cardinal, too, where that little boy, or maybe it's the first cardinal, the one where the little boy starts crying, he goes, oh, you're crying for me, now I want to cry.
Mm.
That's, like, very reminiscent of Julius Caesar with Titinius being like, oh, no, my master's dead.
Yeah, the dream sequence is so random.
Oh, they have one of those in Midsommar, though. And in Richard III, and in Macker's, kind of.
I mean, we see these dream sequences,
mm.
but that it's Shakespearean, but it's so random. The other thing that I think screams collaboration is Shakespeare is kind of known for having very minimal stage directions, thus
mm-hmm.
the bear being
mm-hmm.
so famous in Winter's Tale. Mm-hmm. When you get to the scene that's about how people are walking in for the coronation or whatever.
Yeah, that's true.
And mm-hmm. it is a paragraph or more of these people walk in, then these people holding a train, then they're holding this, then we have two trumpeters holding a brass trumpet with a red flag, and I'm what?
Yeah, it's Act 4, Scene 1, and it's just like, people walk in, and then there's two lines of dialogue. People walk in, two lines of dialogue. It is nuts.
It describes what they're wearing.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not just a scene direction, it's also a costume direction.
It's a George R.R. Martin moment.
It is. It's bizarre. It's one of the stranger things of this play is
yeah.
When you read Shakespeare or perform it, you'll see a lot of like small directions and like you'll just kind of know who comes on and who comes off.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really have any other details other than that. And this you get like their name, their rank, what their sigil is, who what like song
what
is
their
what
words
their entrance
are.
Music is. Like the pyrotechnics. Basically like you get like a professional wrestling entrance.
It's like next, John Cena enters.
Yeah,
with
John Cena comes in with his cool music, does his
holding
thing,
a dog, lifts it over his head like the Lion King.
Lifts it over his head like the Lion King, and then baptizes it.
Offstage
baptism by John Cena.
Two boys come in and say, "Wow, can't believe
wow,
John Cena."
John Cena, look at John
flicked
Cena.
Flicked that dog in the air, baptized it,
and
then caught it.
Suplexed it.
So yeah, John Fletcher is supposedly the homie that co-wrote this. Now, historians can't really say how much he wrote and how much Shakespeare wrote, but the way they actually analyze whether it was co-written or not is like, they've scientifically figured out what Shakespeare is likely to do and what he's not likely to do in his writing, and they just compare that with each of these playwrights' things. And so they decided that they're almost 100% sure it was co-written. They just don't know how much.
Honestly, the other thing that proves it to me, I feel like it's like two friends writing a project together, and they get together. Okay, so you're going to rewrite that part. I'll rewrite this part. And then they get back together the next week. So did you do your rewrite? Oh, yeah, bro. Like, I was busy. I forgot. Oh, guys, we're going to stage it anyway. It feels like the ball got dropped between the two people, and nobody had a final pass.
Again, that comes back to, I think, the lack of any sort of cohesive narrative or drama. It's like a historical story.
Yeah.
It's like someone's telling you a story where they don't want anyone to be the bad guy, except for one guy, Woolsey. But then even then, gets forgiveness from God, and then apparently dies offstage very quickly.
When he's sick.
Yeah, he just gets, like, it's, if you haven't read the play or seen it, which you haven't, the way Woolsey admits his wrongdoings, and then Catherine is told, oh, by the way, he's dead.
Yeah.
He's just dead now. We don't have any inclination to his death. It just kind of surprisingly happened.
Now, John Fletcher also worked on Two Noble Kinsmen, which we'll be reading soon. I don't know if that's the one where there's, like, a rape plot, but there's one Shakespeare play where there's a casual rape situation, and they're like, ha 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 ha, and that's the end of the play. It's nuts.
Kind of happens in this play with the party scene.
Oh, the party scene!
Yes!
We have
party
to start with the party scene.
King Henry as a shepherd.
So,
very fun.
I got...
That is something that he was known to do, though, historically.
Really?
Dress up as other people?
He just jasmined out there?
This is
He's
all...
He's like, I'm one of the people. By jasmine, I mean jasmine.
For my love of history as the epilogue, this is all kind of based off of very hazy memories, but I know there was a party that Henry VIII went to in disguise. That was something that he would do with his bros, because a young Henry had, like, a full-on crew that he would roll with.
Like Hal.
Yeah, exactly. And he would just be that kind of guy. But then there was a very sad story. This is post-horse rollover when he was giant and fat and kind of miserable. And I think it was one of the Annes he was going to marry. And he's like, I'm going to come to her in disguise. And everyone knew that it was Henry.
Uh-huh.
And they all had to pretend that they didn't know that it was Henry.
Oh.
And it's like the saddest thing I've ever heard of this kind of fat old man who still thinks he's still got it and is gross and disgusting and everyone kind of hates him. And he's got this 15-year-old bride there that has to pretend she doesn't know that it's Henry. And he's, like, being all gross and disgusting with her. And so, surprisingly, on brand in this play.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, no. Henry, weird guy.
Weird. So.
The party scene.
Party scene.
I have good notes in the version I have.
Yeah.
And apparently, it was customary in the day that when you danced with someone, you kissed them at the end.
Mm.
So him being, like... Oh, how rude of me to leave you without a kiss after we danced. Is him saying, it's like a flirty way of being like, by the way, I forgot my kiss. Let's kiss for all these people. Boom. Kissed.
Okay.
So it's a little
It's more like,
it's a custom.
Oh, I didn't bow to you.
Exactly.
And okay.
It's
okay.
The equivalent. Folgers Shakespeare Library, that. Y'all. It's my fave. Mm. Also, I got this book from the library, and it was unopened.
Real. This one can die a slow death. Yeah.
Also, Anne Boleyn.
Anne Boleyn?
I don't know how to say her name. I'm the epilogue. One of the most bizarre characters in this play that we haven't even really dove into at all, but I kind of want to.
Sure.
She's barely in it, but there's the scene where she is, I think it's act three, where she's like, I don't even want to be queen. I would never want to be queen. And the old lady's like, no, you're a woman, and all women love money and power. Being queen would be super great. And then she's like, well, okay. And then she becomes queen offstage and just doesn't show up. That's the end of her. She's not in the rest of the play. She's literally in the play to be told, you're a woman, so you want to be queen.
And then she gets power, and she's like, woo, power!
And, yeah. But again, we don't even see her get the power. It's
we see her get that, like, dukedom or whatever. What do they call it?
She doesn't talk, though, I don't think.
Duchessy?
Yeah. No, she does. She's like, oh my god, thank you, Lord. Thank you so much. I can't wait to just be his friend now. Like, she's like, I'll be such a good friend. And everyone's like, all right, Anne, we see you.
With benefits.
We see you.
I get it.
But the best part is that old woman comes back. Mm. She's the only one I did look out for. She comes back when Anne has her child.
Oh, yes!
And he goes, here's 100, like, silver ducats or whatever for the news. And he leaves, and she goes, 100? That's not enough. And she complains about it for, like, 5 lines. I was like, that's my girl.
Because, again, she's a woman, so she loves money and power.
No, it's not about her loving money and power. That woman knows
she also lies.
Be...
Closing. Yeah,
she does lie to the king. Is like, it is a boy. I lied. It's a girl. Immediately.
She does have a live in this world. Exactly. She's like, I'm not getting beheaded. It is a boy. Yeah. In the future, maybe, when this child has a boy. Yeah.
I basically forget everything that happens in this play because nothing happens.
It is one of those plays. It's one of those plays where so much of the same, it repeats itself so many times. Like, there's so many plot elements that are like, this happened already.
Yeah.
So many things happen so many times that you kind of forget the play. The play kind of washes over you. It's a play that just kind of happens.
It just happens.
It happens to you. You don't have a choice.
Exactly. Like, with any good theater, you're kind of, like, immersed in the experience. It's like, you're almost like, when you remember good theater, it's almost like, and I was on stage, too, with them. Like, it's kind of like that intimate, even no matter how big the venue is, it's kind of like an intimate experience. This is just kind of a play that just kind of happens around you.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of a play that you're, like, next to. It's, like, out of the corner of your eye, this play is happening. And you have just kind of, like, a hazy recollection of anything that happened. Even in my part as the epilogue, I literally say, you might have fallen asleep during this.
Yeah!
This is a boring play that you might have slept through.
Oh, did you guys know this play has another name?
Pile of... What?
It's All Is True.
Mm.
No!
It is! That's why there's a whole truth motif in the whole play. Catherine has a lot of lines about it.
Makes so much sense.
The Cardinal has a lot of lines about it. The funniest thing about it is the best joke of the play is nothing is true. The play itself is a lie.
Yeah.
But also, like, anybody who is honest and true doesn't get rewarded. Almost everyone is lying or tricking themselves. Because I feel
it's like calling Game of Thrones, we're all best friends.
Yeah. Game of Thrones, Good Samaritan tales.
Yeah.
It's like Game of Thrones, but everyone is okay with being betrayed because like, I deserve it.
Yeah.
It's everyone is immediately okay with any decision rendered upon them. Because they're like, again, going back to, I think Buckingham is my favorite character.
Yeah.
In this, because he's immediately like, I was always worried about Wolsey. Wolsey betrayed me, and the king has made his decision. But since he's the king and I love him, I am okay with dying.
And the other crazy thing is, this play was wildly popular when it came out.
Well, yeah, because it's propaganda.
I guess so.
Mm-hmm.
It's straight up propaganda.
And we vaguely mentioned it, but I wanted to say, this is the play that burned down the Globe Theater.
Yes, it did.
Famously, the Globe Theater burned to the ground and then was rebuilt again. This play had cannons in it because fire and thatched roofs, why not? Yep. I mean, they had nothing
else. Also, because they just needed something exciting to happen.
The most historical plays in Shakespeare accompanied by wars or some sort of grand sort of epic or bloodshed. This one, the only time a cannon is shot is during a party. It's a party cannon.
To announce
the arrival of some guests.
Yep.
That's the only time. So that, at least, though, that means that when the fire happened, everyone got to leave very quickly, because this happens very early in the play. Like, everyone got to get out of there.
Maybe that's why it was so popular. Everyone was like, wow. I mean, it was starting to heat up, and you could tell they were about to lay some stuff down, but then the fire happened.
And it was great, though. Loved all the
setup. It's like when previews of Spider-Man Into the Dark, like, people were getting injured, and everyone's like, I gotta see it.
A freak like me does need company.
You've heard it?
I've heard some of it. Oh, and let me tell you guys, it is not good.
There you go.
Very bad.
You have it from the epilogue himself.
Yeah.
Oh my god, yeah. So the cannons burn the globe to the ground.
Whoops.
Modern adaptations. There are none.
Mm-hmm. Because you can.
No, this play is, it's a confusing, weird play that should...
never happen.
There's no reason to do a telling of it.
Never.
Like, if you wanted a really good Henry VIII play, you could probably make it or write it. He was a fascinating, interesting, sad, tragic figure. Mm-hmm. And he is kind of...
Is that what The Tudors is?
Kind of.
Is that later?
The Tudors is the Henry show. VIII. The show, The Tudors, that is about Henry VIII. But again, that's young, sexy Henry VIII, which, according to all historical documents, is actually very accurate. He was like he was super sexy. Like this.
He's like Chevy Chase.
Yeah, he was like this super athletic. He would do all the jousting. He was actually really good at it.
Yeah.
He loved to fight. He was a big sportsman. He was charismatic and charming and fun, and everyone loved him. And then he got rolled over by that horse, and he couldn't fight, and he got super fat and sad and drunk, and he kind of hated his own life and kind of talked about how much he hated it, and he kind of knew that he was not great anymore. So he became sad and angry, and he's just kind of this tragic guy who, like, abused all these women and was horrible. And he's a very fascinating man. And this play does not do him justice, because all it does is talk about how great he is, but he's also taken advantage of in this play a lot.
Stick up for himself.
He always trusts one person.
Yeah, there's one
person. And it's the wrong person.
Yeah.
Not always, because that one
Until
second,
the end, at
that
the very
second
end.
Cardinal's eye.
Cramden.
He doesn't maliciously attempt to ruin his life.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, should we read the epilogue? And then you guys don't have to see the play.
Yeah.
Honestly, don't.
Yeah. Well,
just listen to our scathing review.
Beverly will take this.
I'm going to speak for the epilogue.
Thank you.
Because he already said he's sorry so often.
I'm so sorry.
'Tis 10 to 1 this play can never please all that are here. Some come to take their ease and sleep an act or two, but those we fear, we frighten with our trumpets. So 'tis clear they'll say 'tis not others to hear the city abused extremely and to cry, that's witty, which we have not done neither, that I fear. All the expected good we are like to hear, for this play at this time is only in the merciful construction of good women. For such a one we showed them, if they smile, and say 'twill do, I know within a while. All the best men are ours, for 'tis ill hap if they hold when their ladies bid and clap. He literally says, the only good part is the ladies.
The ladies part is the only good part. This play is...
And Elizabeth.
Yeah. Elizabeth. This play is for Elizabeth, and if Elizabeth claps, you clap.
Oh, that's what that is.
That's what that is.
So smart.
That's all...
Mm-hmm.
If Elizabeth likes
it... Maybe that's why everyone was like, this is such a good play!
Yeah, it's a play for her. It was literally a play written for one person who objectively was a truly fantastic queen and just general person in power.
Did she really die a virgin? Is that her?
No, she totally got boned. You know she did.
I mean, that's the...
She's the virgin queen because she never had
a husband.
But,
she had those consorts.
Yeah, she had consorts.
That's dope.
So, that's it.
Yeah. There's really not a lot left to say.
There's nothing left to
There's
say.
There's really not.
You did great, though. Yeah. Thank you for coming on.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
Yeah.
I was glad to be here for this one.
Bringing it all to the real zone, as the epilogue is meant to do.
Mm-hmm. I'm Allison Powell.
I'm Beverly Jean.
I'm the epilogue.
Deuces, peasants!
We'll see a really great scene of that in As You Like It.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. I hope it's a better play.
Yeah.
It's the best. It's...
Guys, I'm sorry. Okay, I get it. I'll go. I can go.
No, Ev,
no,
don't
leave.
Please,
I'm leaving.
Please,
I'm getting up
no.
right now. I'm
please
going.
Come back.
No, okay, fine.
Thank
fine.
You.
We'll
Thank
talk
you.
More about
sorry.
This play.
Look, you seem very kind.
Yeah.
We appreciate your honesty.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for saying I'm sorry so many times
I
after
can't say it enough.
Canada Day was so recently passed.
Mm, yeah. We dated this, didn't we?
July 1st, Canada
yeah.
Day.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Mm-hmm.